Welcome everyone to another episode of the Army and Tom podcast. And today we have Ryan, who's a soldier, fitness enthusiast, and a watch collector. And how you doing, Ryan?
Good, man. Thanks very much for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, for sure, man. I know that another thing that I forgot to say, he got one of the hats that I raffled. he's the winner of the Houdinki hat. So yeah, man, I'm glad to have you, man. You know, one of the things that I said it in the past, one of the things that I want to do, and a lot of times when I talk to people, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I don't know if I have an interesting enough story to tell about watches or whatever. And I always tell them, you know, that's kind of the point of the whole thing, right? Like everyone always has the story or hears a story about actors and famous people and what got them into watches and what they do with watches. We all know you just film movies or whatever it is, but for everyone else it's different, you know. I think that's what was so appealing about people like Watches of Espionage, or you know, all the operators or military people that are getting really big and are into watches, because at the end of the day people want to know what the people that, you know, don't use their watch, that do use their watches on a daily basis, what is their stories and what's the normal people think, you know? So I think that's
you always think, you know, whatever happened to you, isn't that exciting? Because you just consider yourself like a normal person. It's like you're trying to be humble, but you know, you just tell a story or two. You just listen to, like, you know, an episode of your podcast or, you know, Spring Bar podcast or something, that you get into it and you'll be like, holy shit, an hour's gone by. And you're like, you know, I've been just listening to these normal guys tell stories all day long. And, you know, that's what it's about, man, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, for me, I started leave today. I still obviously wear a watch, so I have my Sanging Neptune on. I love it. I love the Neptune. I love the, you know what I was thinking earlier today. One of the things that I like about it is the aluminum bezel. You know, I think that sometimes a little variation is good. And I think that right now we see a lot of, obviously, sapphire bezels and ceramic and you know, a little bit of aluminum or steel bezel is good, and it really really appeals to me, so I like it. What you got on the wrist?
I got a Formex Essence Leggera 41.
Ooh,
speaking
nice.
Of interesting bezels, this one's a zirconium oxide, so this one's like super difficult to scratch and that sort of thing, but probably end up talking about that watch a little bit more later on. But yeah, man, dead ass about the aluminum bezels, though. I don't mind them one bit, you know. Probably a cost-cutting measure that has to be cheaper than, you know, ceramic and definitely sapphire, and probably easier to make and produce and cheap. So I got nothing against it for sure.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Formex is one of those brands, man, that I've been looking at for a long time. I feel like Formex does, you know, how there is watches out there that they're nice watches, they're really good watches, but you feel like they're overpriced, just a tad, you know? With Formex, I feel like it's the opposite. I feel like their watches are really well made, and I think they're a little bit underdog right now, a little bit underpriced. Not a lot of people, honestly, I don't think a lot of people that start in the hobby for the first couple of years probably really know about Formex. And I think their product is really good.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. So I guess I'll jump into one of my stories to kind of, you know, solidify that point. In December of 2019, I won a blog to watch giveaway. It was like their grand prize thing for the year. You know, they give out watches just about every month, but once a year they do like a big grand prize like giveaway. It's usually at the end of the year, and I won an Essence Leggera and a trip to go skydiving with the executives from Formex, and also Ariel Adams from A Blog to Watch.
I did see your story about it.
So, what was it? That was, you know, a watch nerd's dream. I was like losing my shit. I had to take a break at work and just go call them. Like, holy shit. But so, you know, that happened in December of 2019, you know, early 2020. We all know the bullshit that happened then.
Yeah.
So, you know, they told me pretty early on, they were like, hey, look, man. So, you know, obviously we're headquartered in Switzerland. Part of the shtick of the giveaway is that we're going to come join you for it. It's going to be kind of a photo op for us and stuff. And, you know, it's collaboration with a blog to watch. They're in California. That's no big deal.
Yeah.
But we want to come do the jump with you. So this is getting put on hold. And so every like 3 or 4 months, I'd be emailing them and messaging them on Instagram, just being like, hey, man, how's it going? I don't really know what's, you know, what's going on in Switzerland, but just hope you haven't forgotten about me. Because
yeah,
I sure as hell haven't forgotten about you. And, so that basically continued on for 2 years. You know, they were always really nice about it. They'd get back to me pretty quick and just be like, hey, dude, yeah, we haven't forgot. We're still going to do it. You know, I was loosely, part of me was hoping they would be like, you know what, you know, you're being nice and patient. Tell you what, we'll still do the experience later. That has to be postponed because of travel restrictions, but we'll just go ahead and send you the watch instead.
Yeah.
they never did that. It was actually kind of the opposite. I'll get to that later. But so, you know, it was an all-in-one thing. So finally, like the end of 2021 rolls around, then they reached out and they're like, hey, you know, we're looking good to travel now. We're going to be in California in April of 2022. So let's plan it around that. You know, we're going to be there for wind up. So right after wind up, we'll drive down from San Francisco. We'll meet you in LA. And so, yeah, man, that was a hell of a trip. It was like 2.5 days. They flew me out there, stayed in a nice hotel, went skydiving, hung out with Rafael and Marcus from Formex. And they're just absolutely, you know, grade A dudes. Rafael's dad has been in the watch industry for a long time. He started off decades ago as a bike courier for Rado in Switzerland. Then he just kind of moved up the ranks and he founded his own. He makes like, I might be getting this slightly incorrect, but he started a company, Raphael's dad did, that makes hardware for watches. They make like bracelets, links. I think they make cases. They do that sort of stuff. And that's kind of how Formex eventually came to be, is they're like, we're already engineering all these components for watches. Why don't we just start making watches? And so Rafael, if you end up listening to this at some point, I apologize if I'm butchering your family history, but anyhow, so they got started from like, you know, they have a lot of engineering and like build quality in their DNA, you know? And when you handle their watches, you could tell it right away. I mean, you know, one of their big things is like the suspension system that you see on the cases and stuff.
Yeah.
And that really does make a difference as far as how comfortable it is. But I mean, every bit of it, I mean, it's got, you know, horizontal lines, like laser cut to the dial. I mean, you know, when they say it's a chronometer, it dead ass. I mean, you can beat the hell out of it. It's still running like plus 1 second a day.
And, nice.
Nice. But anyways, yeah, for sure. Formex, you get what you pay for. And then some, no doubt about that. You know, eyeing getting one of those violet colored field watches. Have you seen those? It's one of their like,
yes, guys. Yes.
Yeah, those things are badass. I got to see one of those in person, and I got to see pretty much all their watches in person. They were, you know, kind of on a tour of shows when I met up with them. But yeah.
Nice. And nice. Man, that's a pretty cool story, man. It's I need to start getting into this raffles, man, because everyone I know has been winning stuff, and I'm like, I need to start getting into this stuff, man, because I need to win some watches. You know what I'm saying?
Well, hey, you're on one side of it. You're doing them. You're giving away, you know, some nice watch swag and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wouldn't.
Yeah. So yeah. So tell the people what they want, man. Tell them a little bit about yourself. Tell them what you do. How the military comes into place. How the fitness enthusiasm comes into place, and all that, and how what got you into watches.
Sure thing. So my dad, I grew up in Florida. Been in the Florida National Guard for going on 8 years now. Growing up in Florida, I was always like in the pool and at the beach and, you know, surfing, boogie boarding and all that, you know, scuba diving later on and stuff. And, you know, when you're a little kid, you have like zero patience for anything. Whenever we'd go to the beach or the pool, my parents would always be like, nope, hold on. You can't jump in the pool yet. You got to take your clothes off. You got to put your sunscreen on. You got to take your shoes off. You got to, and you're a little kid and you're like, it's right there. I just want to jump in that freaking water. And I noticed at one point when I was like, you know, probably in like low single digit age, my dad at the beach or in the pool, and he didn't take his watch off. And I was like, wait a second, like, we got to take all this stuff off. You can wear your watch. That's okay. He's like, yeah. And he had a Rolex Submariner 5513.
Nice.
And yeah, that was his daily wear for about 30 years. And so I was just instantly, I was hooked. I was fascinated. I was like, there's something I can wear outside of the water that I don't have to take off to go in the water. And so my first watch was a, you know, Wilson, that sports manufacturing company that makes like volleyballs and stuff.
Yeah,
I had a Wilson, I guess you could call it like their version of an Iron Man. It had like a backlight and a stopwatch. It had like a pull-through Velcro strap. And I wore the living shit out of that watch for, I don't know exactly how long, you know, time feels a lot different when you're younger, but I just wore it till it literally fell apart. It was probably like a $10 watch back then. But over the years, whenever we'd go to, you know, garage sales, I'd always be picking through the little jewelry and stuff, looking for watches. And I had just miscellaneous, you know, $20 or $30 watches over the years. And what was it? I got a Seiko 5 for Christmas. I think I was like a junior in high school. And that's still in the family. But when my dad passed and I inherited his 5513, I gave that to my younger brother. It was kind of a nice, like, sentimental gift.
Yeah.
You know? But similar to, I took kind of the dummy route into the military. I was listening to your episode with Casey. So I went to college. I didn't graduate. I was a crappy student. I was in a fraternity. I, you know, binge drank all the time and stuff.
And same with me, man.
I was constantly on like academic probation and stuff. And
yeah,
so I dropped out. I worked full time for a couple of years, and then my full-time job went away. I was, you know, basically laid off.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go back to school. I was relatively close to finishing, but I needed to work. My wife wasn't a U.S. citizen at the time, so she couldn't work. That just wasn't an option. She was also in school, so I was like, crap, what can I do? And the military had always kind of been on my bucket list, so I was like, you know what, screw it, I'll join the National Guard. They got good college benefits, and the rest is history. I'm a 25 Sierra satellite.
Oh, leader. Nice, man. I'm a 25 uniform. Uniform. Yeah. Nice.
In your episode where you're talking about watches for different like MOSs and stuff, did you bring Signal into that?
So I did bring Signal, but I did, when I mentioned Signal, I said, you know, the problem with Signal is we have like 12 MOSs. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to say one like just Signal as a whole. Mm-hmm. And then I did bring Signal up. Matter of fact, I have it right here. Look, I'll tell you exactly what I got. I said the Seiko wrist computer.
Okay.
And then
I mean, if anyone would get some use out of it, it'd probably be us.
Yeah, exactly. And then I said the Aquaterra. The reason why I said the Aquaterra was because I remember when I first started, some of the people that I talked to over Instagram, they were asking me how the watches were handling up. One of them, actually, Time Hack, was asking me how the watches were handling up in the communications world with all the you know, amplitude, power, signals, spectrum, stuff like that. And I never had any issues, but I remember that when I was thinking about watches, and I was like, well, if you want to be a little bit higher end and you want something that is like a grail, something that you can use like an everyday thing, and you don't want to have to worry about none of that stuff, the Aquaterra, because a lot of anti-magnetism on that watch. So I was like, on the series route, the Aquaterra, on the cool, funny route, the Seiko wrist computer. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I brought up. But
one of the watches that I actually have been wearing to drill and SIG X's a lot is the RZE Fortitude. Have you
which one's that one? One?
The RZE Fortitude. It's like Fortitude. They're a micro brand. I think they're out of Southeast Asia somewhere.
Yeah.
And what was it? It's like one YouTube review called it like the poor man's Oris Big Crown Pro Pilot. So it's like, it's highly legible. It's got a NH35 in it. It's 100 meters water resistant, but it's anti-magnetic.
Got it. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. I want to say like 2100 Gauss or something like that. Nothing like the Aqua Terra, but it's, yeah, it's, yeah, up there. It's more than,
but the, more than the Mil Gauss.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, the dial looks really good.
Yeah, it's got a cool texture to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And RZE, they give you a cool little kit with it. They give you like a mini screwdriver, the bracelet, the stock bracelet's not bad. You know, I threw it on
higher end Miyota movement. Yeah, looks pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, what was it? Yeah, they were thinking on the same wavelength, man. Picking something anti-magnetic for sure. The only thing I'd say it's missing that it could use is some sort of a countdown bezel, because with what do you call it? You know, we can't when we index, you can't just
get
too much away, but you can't just completely shut down with
all those
glass components that have been heated up for, you know, sometimes days on end and stuff. If you just like pull the plug, they'll shatter.
Yeah.
So you gotta, you know, time some things when you're shutting down, and sometimes, you know, at other points too. So that's the one thing I'd say could be missing. But yeah, no, those are solid picks for sure.
The I like the texture on the dial. I love, you know, different type of dials and stuff. And then I can definitely see, because the bezel, the machining on the bezel is exactly like the Pro Pilot.
Right.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I agree with that sentiment of being the same style of watch.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. It looks cool, man. I know of RZE. I just never seen the. I don't remember seeing the 42 before, but
I don't think they've done an iteration of them in a while. You know, their focus has been on some other model lines recently. I don't know if you followed the whole fiasco with the, you know, they've shifted for a while to like EDC items, not just watches, but like knives and and stuff. And they were coming out with this badass little titanium knife, but then it was like delayed, and then they just canceled it altogether. It was like crowdfunded, and something happened where like the plans for it were leaked or something, and they were just like, hey, so we're not going forward. Like,
yeah, it happens, man. It happens. But, you know, like, for people that don't know, 25 Sierra, the MOS that he is a satellite guy. So it's fun. I bring that up because one of the things that I've been, talking about is like, I want to interview a Space Force person. And I was like, man, the closest I'm ever probably going to get is a 25 Sierra, you know, because I'm not going to be able to get into a, I can't find a Space Force person. Yeah.
Supposedly, it's one of the MOSs that they're offering, like direct transition to or whatever. I will. You won't catch me doing that though. I joined the Army for. I could have joined, you know, the Air National Guard if I wanted to. I did not do that. I joined.
Yeah.
Not looking to be a guardian. No offense to any that are listening.
Yeah. No, I mean, the cool thing is that, you know, a lot of people. Is the joke of, you know, you're what do you do in the Space Force? Are you a stormtrooper? What do you do? When in reality, they're more like us, you know, than the Como guys than a stormtrooper will be, you know. They're not that cool.
But they do, from what I've heard, they do some goofy stuff. Like when they march, supposedly it's in like a diamond kind of formation.
And
kind of like you'd imagine a stormtrooper would march. So
I don't know.
Like in as far as day to day job goes, you're absolutely right, I'm sure. But like when it comes to their, I don't know, DNC, that's like
I'll tell you what. I want to see that, because marching for people marching behind the other, one behind the other, is a hard time. Mm-hmm. Imagine in a diamond, like, how are you doing this? Like, I want to see that 100%. I want to see the execution of this, and I want to see what it looks like. Mm-hmm. That's 100% for sure.
I'd like to see that too.
It's pretty cool. You know, during leave, I'm gonna go to various areas of Colorado. Mm. So I might stop in the space base over there in Colorado and see what their marching looks like.
Yeah, sure.
I want to take a look at this and report back.
They always make jokes about like the Air Force being like tourists on army bases, like visiting third world countries or whatever. You could you could turn it around and be like, wow, this is what a Space Force base is, like taking pictures and stuff.
You know what's crazy, man? Like when I first joined the army, I've been in the army for 17 and a half years. So when I joined the army, that was extremely like very, very well portrayed. Like the whole thing of, you know, the Air Force and the army are together in a base and you go to the Air Force side and it's better than the army side. 100%. But, you know, lately, the bases that I've been, they have Air Force. They haven't been like swallowed up by the army. Like Fort Bragg was my first base. Mm-hmm. And Fort Bragg had the army side, the Air Force side. And Fort Bragg just so big, it grew and it swallowed up Pope Air Force Base. And it's just Fort Bragg, period. Or now for Liberty. For example, the last base I was in is a joint base, and the Air Force side was not better than the Army side. And it's one of those things that I don't know if you remember, like there was a little while ago, there was a couple of YouTube videos that came out and it was like, this is how the Army lives. And it happened with every service, but the majority of the focus was in the Army and the Marines, obviously. And it was like, these guys are at war and they come back and the barracks look like crap, look like shit. They have mold, you know, all this crap. So the housing, all these things. So the bases started to do this ramp up of modernization in housing and in barracks. So the barracks is always going to be hard because it's hard to modernize the barracks and do it every 3-4 years with the amount of people that we have living in them. So, you know, it's hard, but with housing, you notice it more. And in the last base that I was in, all the Air Force people wanted to live in the Army side because the Army side had double car garage. It had the latest, you know, like the kitchens were in, you know, laminate countertops. That's the typical army base or military base countertops. There's moving on to solid surfaces and this and that, which at the end of the day is preference, right? But it's more of what people see outside than what we would typically see inside the base. So they wanted to live on the Army side. This is the crazy thing. I moved during COVID. And then when I got there, no one was living. So I was put on the Air Force side because no one wanted to live over there. And the Air Force side had space. And definitely you can see the difference. And the Army housing was way better. And I think it's one of those things that it's been transitioning little by little. But because when you're in the Air Force, if you're in one of those, if you're in an Army base or whatever, they still pay you more or they give you more of a stipend because you're in a rough condition or whatever. I think the old idea is still portrayed, but I don't witness it as much as before. So I think we're on the right track though. I think we're on the right track.
You bring up a good point too. I think a lot of those jokes are centered around barracks, but it's like ideally you know, even if you don't make a career out of the Army, you better not be staying in the barracks that long. I mean, that's exactly that's when you're like an E1, maybe through E3 or so.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, even if you don't get married or whatever, if you're just a bachelor or whatever, it's like eventually you're going to get better housing. And yeah. What's that housing like? Is it like you're talking about, does it have nice countertops? Are the appliances beat to shit? You know, like, you know, all the jokes are about like where you live for maybe 2 years tops.
Yeah.
You know, of course that sucks. Let it motivate you. Get the hell out of there.
Exactly. Yeah, no, for sure. Like, you know, work hard, move up in rank, and then move off post. You know, it's exactly. Like, it's one of those things, but you know, it's progress. It's progress. So it's one of those things.
That's interesting to hear.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's very different for sure from when I joined. But yeah, man. So you said that your dad got you, you know, into watches or whatever, and then from there you just kept going. How your collecting journey has changed, like throughout the time, and then did the military affect that once you join the military?
So it's my collecting journey has changed quite a bit. Let's see. I got that Seiko 5 when I was like a junior in high school. I bought a G-Shock around the time that I graduated high school. I pretty much wore that all the way through basic training and everything.
Yeah.
And what during that period that I was out of college, I really wasn't making very much money. I was doing okay for a guy that you know, didn't have a degree or anything.
Yeah.
But again, my wife wasn't a US citizen at the time, so she wasn't able to work. So it was like just me, you know, bringing out the bacon. And so I really got whatever I could find that I liked that was also a solid deal at, like, you know, pawn shops and stuff like that. I ended up with like a few citizens on my 25th birthday. I got a Citizen Nighthawk and I still have that and I love it.
Yeah.
What was it? When I actually had some disposable income to spend, I wanted mechanical watches. I saw quartz as, you know, outside of Eco Drive maybe. I saw quartz as more just like for the, I don't know, saying the layman is, I feel like, has an insulting connotation, but that's what, you know, people who don't know anything about watches wear. They just want, you know, a Timex from Walmart or whatever. I kind of look down on that sort of thing. I was like, I want a mechanical watch. I want one that you have to like set and wind and has like a soul. And that's definitely changed over the years. You know, I recently got a Pulsar G10, one of those British Army issued watches, and I love that thing. It's great. I mean, it's a cheaper watch, but I mean, you know, for what it is, I mean, it's badass. I mean, it looks great on so many NATOs and I probably just got lucky with a good example, but the seconds hand like hits each of the second hash marks every single time.
Really? Damn, that's pretty cool. Awesome.
Yeah. And for graduating basic, I don't know how I found out about it in the first place, but I knew about Hamilton as a brand. But when I went away for basic, I told my wife, I was like, look, you know, we got our finances set up a certain way. You know, you're going to be all right paying the bills and stuff while I'm gone. I'd like you to, you know, sock away a little bit of money here and there. And when I graduate, I want this Hamilton khaki mechanical. I think they call it the khaki mechanical officer. They hadn't started releasing the khaki mechanical. That's like all like faux patinaed and got the long power reserve and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's got like Arabic numerals and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But I told her I want that as a like a graduation gift from basic. It has a nice like kind of OD green dial and stuff. And I got it and it was like smaller than I was expecting. I wasn't that experienced of a collector. I didn't check on what size it was.
I just knew
it was like a field watch and it would look good when I'm wearing my OCPs and stuff. And so I got it and I was taken a little aback at first, you know, it's 38 millimeters, but the more I wore it, the more I started to really appreciate that. Yeah. And, started to think, you know, like what else is out there that's kind of like this, what's got military heritage or, you know, real military use case. And you know, I dug a lot more into Hamilton. You know, obviously I'm still into that kind of watch with the Pulsar and what was it? Over, let's see. For the longest time in the Guard, I wouldn't wear any of my mechanical watches. I always wore G-Shocks, and, you know, I've got four or five of those. And I think it was, I tended to baby my watches, and I still do my more expensive ones. I'm a little embarrassed to say.
You're good.
You know, you're not going to see me wearing my Rolex or, you know, any of my Omegas to drill or training or anything like that. But, you know, once I actually got inspired by like watches and warfighters, seeing him wear like a JLC to the range.
He did.
It's like Oakley shooting gloves and then like a reverso. And I'm like, damn, dude, I gotta, you know what? I think, all right, you know what? I think I can wear some of mine. I'm still not going to put my Rolly on to go shoot Cruiser. But I think, you know, I can wear some of my mechanical watches a little more often. So. And that kind of got me digging into, you know, all right, what's a mechanical watch that I legit would not be afraid to wear? And, you know, I started wearing my Citizen ProMaster NY0040 to drill. I'd put that on like a NATO or a, you know, two-piece Velcro strap or something. And, you know, I got the RZE now. I'll wear that. Yeah. And so, yeah, the military's definitely got a good amount of influence on my... you know, a significant portion of my collection now. There's still a lot of watches that I won't wear, but not so much because I want to baby them, but more just like I have watches that would are a lot more practical for the military use case, like my RZE being anti-magnetic, or you know, the Citizen having, you know, having a countdown bezel but and being tough, but also having that a slim profile, because, you know, when I need to climb around and troubleshoot in our equipment and stuff, I'm going to be knocking it around and stuff like that. So,
yeah, because I would tell you, man, like, I would say that probably, other than electronic warfare, you guys' equipment are probably the most, the one to put the most risk for the watch when it comes to magnetism, because there's a lot of power going through that, right? Even in the smaller pieces of equipment for when it comes to satellite communications and stuff like that. So, so it's not like in the movies where people think that, you know, we use like pocket size satellites and stuff like that. That barely use, you know, it's definitely different. So it, between electronic warfare and satellite communications is definitely where the watches are the most at risk for magnetism and stuff like that. So, you know, it's, I can see where that, and, you know, you got a pretty sizable collection, man. And it, you know, you have a lot of nice watches. So
thank you.
You know, it's like always, you know, we always say, you know, wear your watches, use your tools and stuff like that. But there is this real thing where the first scratch on any watch that you're super into is the hardest one, right? Oh, so yeah. Like when you get, and I'm not talking about the, you know, the typical hairline scratches and stuff like that. I'm talking about like noticeable, right? Mm-hmm. So for someone, if you have a piece of a piece out that you doesn't have any big scratches, it is a little bit of intimidating at first, you know. And for you guys, there is a lot, man. You know, one of the things that I did not too long ago, we're still doing at the division level, is that we're going through all the brigades and we're kind of resetting all their SAT equipment, right? Their upper TI equipment. So for those of you that are not military, the internet equipment, right? Mm-hmm. So we're kind of resetting them. And one of the things that we're doing is we're recabling and stuff like that. So while they're doing it, we're just facilitating, right, the support. So the funny thing is, I didn't know how much there was this one unit that had a cable that went bad. And they ran the cable through the outside. They didn't do it properly. And we were like, okay, well, let's pop the zip ties. Let's get in there in all these little spaces and run this cable through. And it was like 32 zip ties. Mm-hmm. And the spaces to get through, I was like, oh man, I'm glad that when I joined, it was like radios and that was it. It was nothing crazy back then.
Yes, you're not lying. What was it? I'm not a huge guy. I'm about 6 feet tall, about like 180 pounds. So I'm like a little above average maybe. And I've, over the years, I've kind of mastered the art of just kind of hopping inside the cab of our satellite terminals.
Yeah.
And whenever we get like new full-time staff or a new commander or something like that, I'll always make it a point to just kind of like wait till they're coming around and just be like, oh, hi, sir. And just like whoop, and just like jump in.
Yeah.
And like, how the hell did you do that? Like, yeah, they're, it's tight spaces for sure. And zip ties galore. You got to do it.
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, so moving away from the military a little bit, or I guess connecting it, what do you still work in IT outside the military?
No, not really. I'm kind of a, I guess you could say like a black sheep at my unit. You know, most of the people at my unit, on the M-Day side anyways, are in like IT or, cybersecurity and that sort of thing on the civilian side. I work, I'm an analyst for an insurance company.
I don't do anything
with that. I do a little bit of like, I work with databases a little bit and like, I have to know like a tiny bit of code to pull info and build databases, but I'm not, you know, I'm not that kind of guy.
No, I got you.
Yeah. In college, I studied economics. So I really don't come from a background in that. When I joined the Guard, the state of Florida was very overstrength at the time. So unless I was willing to travel a great distance, which I wasn't, the jobs were very, it was slim pickings. They had jobs like, I think one of them was Allied Trade Specialist, which was like a metal shop worker or something. And I was like, doing that. And nothing, you know, one thing the Army's taught me is that like the expression, the world needs a lot of ditch diggers. That's not an insult. I mean, literally there's a need for everybody. That's why the Army pays you to do that stuff. But like we need that shit. But it's just more like, all right, if I'm making this commitment, if I'm going to go away, if I'm going to be away from my wife and sign on the dotted line, I'm going to pick a job that I want to do. I'm not going to jump first thing, you know? So I wasn't going to be a fuel truck driver. I wasn't going to be a metal shop worker, whatever.
I'm telling you, man, like it's reality, you know, because, you know, there's people that like it, but for majority of people, it's a very demanding job. It's like with cooks, right? Yeah. A lot of times people think, you know, you can get some really good training. You can go to culinary, training and stuff like that, and you can go to culinary competitions, but I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to work your ass off because you know, wake up really early to feed a hundreds if not thousands of people in the morning really early, and then do it again for lunch, and then do it again for dinner. So
I've had the KP a time or two. My unit's really small, so when we get to joint training with other units and you end up having like, you know, ancillary duties like that and stuff, like, all right, we need two from Charlie Company for KP. And I've been that low man on the totem pole who's like, all right, you got KP 0330. And it's not just the waking up early, it's your dead ass 100%. Like the guy in charge is not just standing around pointing. He is he or she is running around, you know, thawing those bags of, you know, scrambled eggs and whatever. You know, that's, it's hard work.
It is, man. But you know, I'm kind of the same boat. I haven't been aligning myself with IT for when I retire. You know, my degree's in project management. I have, you know, Lean Six Sigma and project management certs, I have actually studying right now to get my realtor license. Like I don't have, I don't have anything towards IT. And I think it's because, you know, I've been doing it for so long with the military and I'm a very obviously, you know, having a podcast, but I'm a very social person. Now, I like my alone time, like any good military person, but it's one of those things that, you know, I have no issues with going to someone and just talking to someone. You know, I was strangely enough successful when I was a recruiter. So, you know, I hated it. I did not like being a recruiter, but I was successful because of the fact that I'm very social. So I don't know if the type of, I'm the type of person that will be good at standing or sitting behind a computer and mainly doing code or, you know, networking and stuff like that. So I'm in the same boat. So no worries here, man. I understand it, you know. But what about your fitness enthusiast side? Like, how did that came along? And have you had any changes or like in your watch collecting when it comes to that? Or do you use any watches to work out? Because I know, like, Time Hack, he doesn't really like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm what was it? So, let's see, I'm trying to figure out where to start with my answer. So, kind of transitioning from what you were saying, I'm sort of doing the same thing. I'm using the Army Cool program now to get my personal training certification. So I'm continuing on the path of not IT. Eventually I'd like to, once I'm vested at the company I'm with now, I'd like to pack my bags and hopefully go into the fitness industry. I was pretty overweight when I was growing up as a kid.
Okay.
And I started playing sports and stuff in high school and started losing weight and looking better and stuff, and it just kind of grew from there. Eventually I stopped playing like organized sports altogether, but I just went to the gym a lot. You know, I wasn't like a bodybuilder or anything like that. I just liked exercising. I was into wellness and fitness and stuff. And most recently, I have what I consider a pretty balanced fitness program. I do CrossFit 3 days a week. I do yoga at least once a week. I usually take a hot yoga class. So that's a different kind of workout. If you've never tried it.
Yeah, for sure.
You, you know, you're not gasping for air like you would be at, you know, CrossFit or doing some, you know, legit Army PT.
Yeah.
But you leave there and you are just beat to hell. Like you can't, like you can literally put through the ringer. But, and then once or twice a week, I'll go rock. We have some nice lakes and trails around where I live, and I have a whole separate rock that I never change. I don't put anything in it. I don't take anything out of it. I just leave it. It's like the exact same weight. I'll just throw on my boots and go rock for, you know, 6 miles or so. And so when I don't wear a watch when I do CrossFit, you know, the coaches. The coaches take care of the time for you, so I don't really worry about it then. When I'm rucking, I'm always wearing a watch. It's usually a G-Shock. Sometimes I'll go with, you know, maybe my Citizen ProMaster or a field watch, you know, like one of my Hamiltons or the Pulsar. Let's see, what else? No watch during hot yoga. That's kind of the point of yoga, is to just unplug a little bit. Exactly. And be like, you know, not worry about what time it is and stuff. So I wouldn't say, you know, as big as both of the things are in my life, fitness and watches are fairly separate from each other, I would say. You know, one doesn't particularly affect the other. I like having a watch when I'm rucking, mostly for a convenience thing, just because you know, sometimes I'll be on a trail, I won't be in a loop just going around, and I'll be like, you know, How long have I been doing this? Do I need to leave? You know, am I going to start working soon? You know? So that's more of a practicality thing. But for the most part, those are hobbies I'm just now realizing I keep pretty separate from one another. So
I think, you know, and one of the things that Tom Hag was saying is he doesn't like the feel of it throws him off, right? Of wearing a watch while you're working out and stuff. I feel like you're restricted. For me, I love wearing a watch when I work out, but what throws me off is if the watch is heavy. So kind of the presence of the watch doesn't really matter to me, but how big it is or how small.
Yeah.
There is two things that I like. I like elasticity on the band because obviously you're going to swell up and I don't want to go from wearing it feeling good to being too tight.
Right.
And the other thing is how heavy the watch is, right? Or how the watch itself wears when it comes to the weight. Because there's some heavy watches that are pretty balanced and doesn't bother me as much. Like, for example, I use my Gypsy, my Sangin Gypsy, for rocking a lot and stuff like that. And that one doesn't bother me. But also, I have it on the Decon 2 strap. And the Decon 2 strap, like, change everything for me, because one of the things that I was doing before was I would use elastic NATO style strap, right? Kind of like Erica's original, or you know, like the D-Lugs one, stuff like that, because the elasticity to the strap, and that one, those ones were really comfortable. Yeah. And I put them on those watches, or I put them on a Casio G-Shock. But when I got the Decon 2 strap, the Decon 2 strap has really good elasticity to it. So you can wear it pretty tight.
It looks like it. I'm...
Yeah. Yeah. And you won't notice.
I'm looking, I'm looking it up a little bit as you're talking about it. I've never heard of those before. I mean, I follow Anti-Watch Watch Club, yeah. But I guess I've never really looked at their shop before. But that looks
bad. Yeah. Their Decon 2 strap, you know, funny enough, wasn't supposed to be their primary strap. The primary strap, the most, the higher end strap was supposed to be the other strap that they have. Man, and I'm forgetting the name right now. They're gonna kill me. But the other strap, the Tacon strap, was supposed to be the more, you know, higher end strap. But everyone loved the Decon 2, because the Decon 2 has that presence of a rubber strap. If it's really thin, it wears really comfortable. But you can tighten it up really good, wear it like you normally want to, and don't have to worry about it when you go to the gym, because when you swell up, it's going to stretch and it's going to stay comfortable.
You can tell just by looking at it that it'll stretch. Yeah. It's crazy. I've never heard of one of these before just now. But yeah. I mean, yeah, just by looking at it, you can see like those ridges in it. And that's not for nothing, because like a lot of NATO straps will have, you know, those like deep cut ridges in them. But you, I mean, those don't stretch. But this for sure, I mean, and you can see that's got some spring to it for sure.
Yeah, no, for sure. It feels very comfortable. Like, honestly, I have to say that, sure, you know, and this is a strap that is for a tools style use, right? So you can wear it for whatever you want, but if you're looking for something that you're going to wear under a suit, this is probably not going to be a choice. But at the end of the day, I'm telling you, like, when I first got that strap, it was actually, I was in the process of moving. So I was about to give my housing in Alaska up, and I didn't have an address anymore. I didn't have an address here yet in Kansas, so I couldn't order one. And then Jason from Watch Rolling is the one that he got one, and he sent it to me, an additional one. He sent it to me. And I got to tell you, man, as soon as I put it on the watch, I was like, man, this is 100% like a very legit high-end strap. Like, it is extremely good. And the cool thing about it is, like, as soon as I got it, I shaped the end to what I wanted it and stuff. You can do stuff to it and make it fit whatever your use is. But man, it's really good. Really, really good. Yeah. And it's one of those things that I will never get rid of it. You know, like right now I took it off the watch for a little bit. And then I'm going to put it on another one and just keep wearing it. And I haven't put it on one of the the Cassie Oaks yet, because the main ones that I use for PT, I have two that I use for PT. They're the regular G-Shock resin watch. So they're very lightweight. They don't wear anything. They don't weigh anything. But I do have one of the metal Cassie Oaks that are heavier. And I want to put it on that one and see how it feels. Because what I did with the with my Cassie Oaks is I bought the adapters and I put them in there so I can put any strap. I don't have to go with the weird sizing strap that G-Shock uses.
Yeah.
So so I can put any strap in there, and I love it, man. It gives a different look to the watches. They fit differently. I love it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's what was it? Not to backtrack at all, but it's interesting that you brought that up, PT. I just realized that's like one of the few points where those two hobbies, and I don't know if you can really call it PT, like organized army PT, but it is fitness, and one of the few times where my watches and fitness kind of intersect, because you always need a watch at PT, you know.
Especially,
you know, you're an NCO, you end up running it, you got to make sure everyone's done on time to do hygiene and all that other stuff. So that's interesting ties there, you know, as we keep talking. I'm like, oh, the army kind of links those two hobbies for me.
Yeah, for sure. But, man,
Jason is what was it, he's good people. I've your episode, I've messaged with him a bunch on Instagram and stuff. That's one thing that's I'm really grateful for over the last maybe 2 or 3 months, is like the military specific watch community on Instagram. I mean, I follow a lot of other like non-military watch accounts and stuff, and you know, they've got some good content and stuff, but I feel like a really nice kind of like kinship with, you know, guys like you and Jason and Justin from Recon Team Forsberg, definitely Casey from you know, Time Hack, and all those guys. You know, speaking of the giveaway that you did, and I recently won one that Justin and Recon from Recon Team Forsberg, and this build custom Seiko builder, Gigawatt Watches is his is the name of his Instagram account. They just did a collaboration. It was like a custom design that Justin commissioned him for, and I won that.
Isn't that the one that you got on your you posted about it not too long ago?
What was it? Posted a reel about it, and my photography skills leave something to be desired for anybody. Alex already knows that, but you know, I'm I have kind of an off-brand phone, and then I'm just a shitty photographer in general. But if you lost where I was going with that, but yeah, I'm definitely grateful for the, you know, little community of guys that I've connected with on Instagram over the last few months, yourself included. So it's been really nice.
For sure, man. That's one of the things, you know, that I like about it, you know, is the community, honestly. Like it could be my podcast could stop growing, honestly, I don't care. Like the people that I have met, the people that I have talked to, is incredible. The community and stuff like that is amazing, you know. So it's a really cool thing. I did see that pose, man, and that Seiko does look good for sure, you know. For sure. So talking about your collection, man, what are your top three watches, the ones that you are attached to the most?
So that would be my dad's Submariner 5513
for sure.
For as an early 10th wedding anniversary gift, my wife got me a Breitling old Navitimer.
Nice.
That's on my Instagram feed too.
Yep, I've seen it.
That watch, it's still hard to explain all these years later, but I saw it in a movie when I was like 10 years old, and the movie was called The Skulls. It had Joshua Jackson from the Mighty Ducks in it. It's kind of like loosely based on the Skull and Bones Society from
Yale.
And it's kind of a suspense thriller sort of movie, but They gave all the guys who were like initiated into the Skulls a Breitling, like old Navitimer. It was like good product placement for the movie. I doubt that that's a thing that actually happens in the real one. But, you know, I mean,
it's all, yeah. Who knows?
Something about it just stuck with me. It's very like, it's got a really busy dial with like the slide roll bezel and internal slide roll bezel, I should say. And, you know, it always stuck with me. Later on, I saw the movie again when I was a little bit older, and I Googled it and found out what kind of watch it was. And I didn't obsess over it, but whenever I'd look at it, it just stuck with me. I was like, that's a Breitling old Navitimer A2. And it just stuck. And through my early collecting days, when, like I said, I had like no disposable income and just would get lucky at pawn shops with a decent Citizen here and there and stuff, that it was always in the back of my mind. And my wife knew that, and she found a kick-ass example of it on sale from a seller in Japan earlier this year on eBay and got it for me. So that's probably number two. And let's see, number three. Top two. I don't know. I'm looking through my feed a little bit here to see if I have to think about it this hard.
That is a hard thought right there, man.
I'd say maybe the Formex, because of just awesome of
experience.
Experience that was in general, and getting to that was before I'd really connected with anybody on Instagram. I followed a lot of accounts, but I hadn't really been making friends or anything like I have been recently. There's the Formex. My father-in-law gave me a Longines Dolce Vita quartz watch. It's like a tank style. Nice. It's a fairly basic Longines, but he gave that to me the first time I met him, and that's always going to be a keeper. That's
nice.
Got a lot of sentimental value, and that was my first. Like probably $500+ Swiss watch, and nice. It was very early in my collecting days. That was when I was working and my wife wasn't, and that was before I joined the army and that sort of thing. So to me, a $500 watch was like, I felt like I won the lottery. So
yeah, 100%. I mean, we in the watch collecting world, we can a lot of people throw the word around of a cheaper watch or a low end, but at the end of the day, $500 is a lot of money.
Yeah,
because I bet anyone will take $500. So, at the end of the day, it's a lot of money. So, and those watches, Longines makes some really good watches, man. I really like
tearing it up lately.
Yeah,
the freaking Spirit collection. Holy,
yep. Because for the Formex, you jumped with that watch, right? You had it on when they made you put it on.
Not exactly. So you see me in pictures wearing a Formex. I wore like a showpiece that they were taking around to like wind up and the other watch shows and stuff. So they didn't have, as long as I waited for that whole experience, when the time came, they didn't have my prize watch to give me. What the hell, man? I flew like across the country and waited the better part of 3 years, and I show up here and you guys don't have a watch for me. But I couldn't be mad. I was they're paying for the whole trip, and it was a really good time just hanging out with them and stuff. But I ended up they were redoing the Essence Legera, so at the time that I won the contest, they had an older version of it. They were only making it in like 43 millimeters, and the case and the dial were both forged carbon. At the time that we finally ended up getting to do the jump and the trip and stuff, they were reworking. They had rebranded. Their logo was different. Their font, all that was different. So they were re-releasing the Legera. And so all they had really were those show like prototypes.
Got it.
So the new Essence Legera wasn't in production yet. And so they said, if you want a 43 millimeter, we're going to make it in 43 and 41. If you want the 43, we can get that to you in like a month or two. If you want the 41, you're going to have to wait. We jumped in like April. They said, you're going to have to wait till like July or August. And as much as it killed me to wait that much longer to actually get the watch, I was like, you know what, I want the 41-40, you know, for being a guy the size that I am, my wrists are like 6 3/4 inches. So they're kind of small for a guy as big as I am. So I was like, you know what, I'll definitely wait for the 41. That's
And you know, like that watch doesn't have a big bezel. It's not like a big bezel diver type of watch. So the dial is bigger. So 41 is gonna feel pretty good.
It's it's substantial for sure.
Yeah.
That's for 41. Sure. And,
Because I thought that was the exact watch you wore for the jump when I saw the.
So in a very roundabout way, no. During the jump, I wore the green dial 43 mil version.
So that's at the end of the day, you know, that watch reminds you of that experience, that whole experience of the trip, you know, sharing time with them, jumping. You know, that's a cool experience, man. And that's what watches gives us, you know, because that watch is probably going to keep going through your life. And that's one of those moments that live there forever. So obviously, you know, it's going to be a very, it's going to have a strong attachment to the between you and the watch, you know. So that's pretty cool, man. That's pretty cool. Yeah, man. So before we start closing it up, we've been at an hour already. That's one of those things that we said before, like it goes by super quick. I know that over there is a little bit later than it is over here, so I don't want to take too much time. But before we close it up, we start closing it up. Any stories that you want to hit on before we go to the other part that I want to go through?
Let's see. Go back to my notes. No, man, I think we pretty much touched on everything I wanted to, all the talking points that I thought would be interesting and make good stories and stuff. You know, the skydiving experience, you know, connecting with, you know, honestly, like making some really good friends here on Instagram and this little community and stuff, and talking about my first watch and, you know, my top three watches and all that good stuff.
So one thing, you know, you're in Florida, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Time Hack in Florida?
No, I think he's in Virginia.
Oh yeah, that's right. Damn. I don't know why I thought Florida, but man, I know.
I think Jason from Watch Rolling is in Georgia.
No, he's in Virginia also. He's in Virginia.
Is he?
Yeah, Jason is in Virginia, and then you have Cody from AWWC in Georgia. So there's a lot of people on the East Coast. Yeah. But one thing is, I'm going to be, when I retire, more than likely I'm going to be retiring in Tampa. So
good deal, man.
We can get together at some point when I retire. So one thing that I like to do, I haven't done it in a while. One thing that I like to do is ask the guest from one of their hot takes. Was a hot take that you have, something that you think is a hot take? And I'll give you one of mine recently.
Sure.
So for me, I would say having gotten that Grand Seiko not too long ago, I would say I know that people talk trash about Grand Seiko bracelets, but I like that bracelet more than the Omega Seamaster bracelet. And I know that's a hot take, because at the end of the day, everyone complains about the tapering on the Seamaster bracelet, but everyone likes the bracelet. They just wish it tapered.
Right.
Everyone likes the construction. Everyone likes the bracelet and all that stuff. How the watch looks on the bracelet. I don't, because I don't know if you ever seen my Seamaster. It was never, ever on the Seamaster bracelet. Matter of fact, I remember going to a watch meetup in Kansas, and people seemed disgusted that I had my Seamaster on an Uncle Seiko bracelet. You know? But to me, it wore better because it tapered. It was president style. It wore better. But
I've seen your Omega on that bracelet. It's sharp. I like it on that bracelet.
Yeah, but when it comes to the Grand Seiko bracelet, I like it more. So that is my hot take.
If I can respond to yours real quick.
Yeah.
You have a Grand Seiko that is meant to be on that bracelet for
sure.
That one that you have, the GMT quartz, I mean,
yeah.
That thing, I mean, it just goes well together.
Yeah,
that's more of a tooley, sporty kind of Grand Seiko.
Yeah.
So if I had that Grand Seiko, I'd dead ass be wearing it on that bracelet for sure. So I agree with that.
Yeah. The Heritage collections, or the more dressy versions, mm-hmm. from Grand Seiko, definitely strap oriented watches.
Yeah, I have an SPGA 427, the Soko Frost.
Yeah.
I mean, it spec wise, you could say it's sporty. I mean, it's 100 meters water resistant, and it's got a screw down crown and all that jazz. But I mean, it's a dress. It's definitely a dressy watch.
It's like a casual. It gives me the same vibes as like a Datejust, right? Like, sure, you can wear a Datejust to the pool, but at the end of the day, it's a casual, type of watch that you wear to work and your everyday life, but not as a sporty thing.
It's a sport-capable watch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
So I don't know how much of a hot take you'd call it, but so Tissot has been on everybody's radar a lot over the last, I don't know when exactly, they released the PRX, but
two, three years ago.
I think they've been killing it for years. Before they released that at all, they had the Gentleman. The Silicum. That thing, I always thought, I've never owned one, but just looking at it and checking out its specs and stuff, I thought that was like a much more like a Aquaterra at like a tenth of the price. I mean, it comes in a million dial colors and variations. Some of them have the crosshair dial, some don't. You can get it in like white, blue, black, green. And even the cosmetic similarities between them, like the bracelet's got like polished center links, just like an Aquaterra. I mean, it's incredible. It's 100 meters water resistant. Obviously the Aquaterra is more specced up. It's got the anti-magnetism and stuff. But if you look at that, I think it's the Tissot Heritage Chronograph that they released this stuff long before. I think that they just got the timing right with the PRX and the integrated bracelet craze, which I feel is sort of dying out a little bit.
I think it's dying out a little bit,
And not because they're not cool anymore, but they're just like, it's been overdone. Like too many brands have done it at this point. And it's just like, all right, we're tired of seeing it. But, and it is a great watch. I'm not knocking it one bit. I think as a brand, they've been killing it. I mean, as far as like affordable stuff from the Swatch Group, they're number one on my charts, I'd say. Hamilton's great. They've started kind of reaching into more expensive price tiers, like the Jack Ryan chronograph and the Intramatic chronographs. Those are well up over that. But so I'd say to bottom line up front, Tissot is like number one in the Swatch Group for value and as far as like what they've been cranking out for years and years. Pre-PRX.
Yeah, no, I agree. You're not going to get it. I think it is a hot take when it comes to saying, the fact that it's the best brand in the Swatch Group when it comes to value that they're giving you, the watch that they're giving you for the money that they're giving you and how much they put into the watches. I think, and not for me, but from people, they're going to feel like it's a hot take. For me, on my side, I've been a Tissot lover for years, mm-hmm. and I still have a Tissot C-Star 1000, and this is the thing about it, right? The Tissot C-Star is extremely specced out for a watch that you can get, depending on where you buy it, you can get it for $600, mm-hmm. and it's extremely specced out. You're getting 300 meters of water resistance in the 1000. If you want more, you go to the 2000 and you get, 600 meters of water resistance. So you're getting 300 meters of water resistance. You can get it you get in the Powermatic 80 movement, you can get it with the silicone hairspring, which increases anti-magnetism capabilities. You know, it's an amazing watch. But I think that, you know, one of the things that I don't like about that watch is the size. Right? I think if they bring it down, and they did brought it down in the quartz version to 40 millimeters.
Right.
If they take that 40 millimeter casing that they did just now, and they put the Powermatic 80 movement on that, and they say, hey, this is also the automatic version, which they did it with the PRX. They released on the 36 millimeter in quartz first, and now they released a year later, they released the automatic version. Yep. So who knows? Maybe they do it. But I feel like if they do that, a lot more people would jump into it, because I feel like the straightness of the and the chunkiness of the lugs with that watch being a little bit bigger is throwing people off.
Yeah.
From getting it. But that's a spec'd out watch that you can get for $500 from a Swatch Group company. Dude, I love the Powermatic 80 movement. It, you know, I feel like it's a really good movement. Mm-hmm. It looks good. The watch looks good. The Gentleman, there was versions with silicone hair springs that, again, you're getting that anti-magnetism. Sure, you're not getting an Aquaterra anti-magnetism, but you're getting anti-magnetism from a watch. It costs you $600. Like, you can't get those things. The dials are very well executed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I feel like, honestly, I have gotten watches and gotten rid of watches throughout my watch collecting journey. And I still, even though I don't like this, I think the sizing should be smaller. I can't get rid of that watch because that watch is just that good. Mm-hmm. So the goods are way too heavy and outweigh the cons. So I feel like a lot of people maybe, you know, when it comes to watch collecting, if it's a, and I honestly feel like their watches are better than majority of Hamilton's watches. Now, I think that Hamilton does a better job at marketing their tool watches than Tissot does. And Tissot is just lagging behind on that. If they did a better job and reduced their catalog to because they have way too many watches out there, I think it would do them good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I mean, the definitely, man. A fan of Tissot, a fan of what they do and their watches, man. That's for sure. I know some people are gonna talk crap about it, and they're gonna say that I'm crazy, or that we're crazy. But I just feel like it's an extreme value. I would say Hamilton. I don't know if you have seen the Frogman, the khaki navy Frogman. They released it probably about eight, nine months ago.
Okay. Maybe I'm thinking of one of their older ones, like the khaki navy scuba or something. I think I might be confused.
They do.
With
that one. They have the khaki navy scuba, and then they released the khaki navy scuba Frogman, which is a re-release. It actually was there before, and they took it away. It's bigger. It has a crown protection, kind of like the Panerai.
Okay, yeah.
But it's not square, it's circular. So the whole case. So it's a little bit different. It doesn't give you really Panerai vibes other than the crown protector, the crown guard. But it looks good, man. It looks good. And it's only 41 millimeters. And lug to lug, it's like 46. So that wears good. That's like a Seiko.
Oh, wow.
So you're talking about a really good wearing watch. So really cool. Really cool.
I hadn't seen that before.
Yeah, the bad thing about Hamilton is when it comes to khakis, Hamilton concentrates on just the field watches and not the scuba side. So that's the bad thing about Hamilton, because they definitely should push that Frogman a little bit more. So
yeah,
for sure. But yeah, man, I'm glad that you came in. I'm glad that we found some time to have you in, tell a little bit of your story. I feel like I said, more and more people that I can have, that just do the regular work out there with watches and are the watch enthusiasts world. I think it's telling that story. I think it goes a long way for people to connect with those things, right? The same type of things that we do and are in the watch collecting world. So appreciate you coming in, man. I know I don't want to take too much more time in your life. Your wife is going to get mad, but yeah, hopefully you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks. Yeah. You enjoy the rest of your leave.
Yeah, man, for sure. And I'm telling you, I'm going to go to Colorado. I'm going to swing by that Space Force base. I'm going to see how they march on a diamond and see.
Get what they do. Get that intel. Let's see how they operate.
I'm going to report back and see what they do, because I bet you they probably have some pretty cool hangout spaces, because I don't think they do any other work. But yeah, man, good to have you. And yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the episode. Ryan has his Instagram page at Watch My Life 13, right?
Yeah, and it's Life, LYFE.
Yep. And follow him. Give him a follow. Follow his stories. He has a pretty good collection, a pretty robust collection all across. So give him a follow. And hopefully you guys enjoy the episode. And that's pretty much it, guys. Stay tuned. Talk to you guys later.
Take care.